I come to you in the Straits of Florida, in between Key West, which is behind me, although you can't see it, and Cuba on the other side of the boat. I'm aboard the Virgin Voyages Brilliant Lady, one of her earliest sailings. I'm on a gay cruise, my first gay cruise ever, put on by Atlantis Events, and it is hilarious. It is, I think the capacity of this boat's around 2,000 people. So to have 2,000 people from every facet of male gay life, it doesn't seem to be as much around lesbians or other, like, the queer type stuff. But it's just like every facet of male gay life, and it's hilarious. There are people who are really into their bodies, like super muscular, they were working out first thing this morning. There are old dudes, there are big hairy fat guys, it's just like all over the whole entire spectrum, and it's so adorable to see so many people just having a good time and just hanging out with each other and totally letting their guard down. So it's really neat that it's such a safe space. I was going to say safe, inclusive space, but, you know, like I said, it's just the gay male population. It's very specific with them. There are a lot of drag queens on board, which is fun, but they're brought in for the entertainment factor. Saw an awesome drag performance last night by Cacophony Daniels, who has an incredible singing voice. Just really interesting to see. Originally, this boat was supposed to be going in totally the opposite direction, going over that way, but we got sidetracked by the tropical storm Melissa, so the whole ship's itinerary had to shift. That's the first time I've ever been involved in a cruise ship where the whole itinerary, like everything changed totally and completely, which was wild. Now I refunded all our excursions, and so now we have a sea day heading over towards Mexico to dodge the storm. And what better time than to hang out with you fine people. So let's see what your top voted questions are from PollGab. Do I Want to Know All asks, hi Brent, thank you for all the community work. You're welcome. Since you work on two database platforms, do the job duties for developers, development DBAs, and production DBAs change with the platform, or do they stay the same? For me, it's less about different databases, because the way that you might back up one database or tune one database might be different. The way that you accomplish those tasks might be different, but you know what really changes it is cloud versus non-cloud. So when Richie and I designed SQL Constant Care, the monitoring app for SQL Server, we decided to put it on Aurora Postgres because we didn't want to deal with stuff like backups, patches, high availability, disaster recovery. And Amazon just does that for you. So that's really where the job descriptions start to change. Next up, Data Barbie Administrator says, what are your thoughts on pushing semi-structured data types like JSON into a relational database like SQL Server? A friend of mine says it's not SQL Server's job because Microsoft isn't going to revolutionize the engine just for one data type. So normally when you hear me answer questions about this, I'm like, don't put JSON in the database. It's for things that need to join to each other. But I recognize that there's a population of people who want to be able to use one persistence layer for any kind of data they want to store. And Microsoft recognized that too. And clearly JSON has won the war for unstructured data type. In like transactional stuff, not as much in data warehouses. Microsoft understood that they wanted to do it or that it needed to be done. And so they did make a lot of big changes in 2025. And I kind of find it funny because it doesn't work very well, in my opinion, the JSON indexes in 2025. As far as I can tell, there's no way to see how large they are. There's no way to predict how long it's going to take. And I have a blog post coming out, might be out by the time this video drops, about how we used to index JSON data before 2025 and how we index it in 2025. And my big takeaway is you should use the old way. And I give examples. I think that the new indexes will... I'm always an optimist. I'm always like, things are going to get better. It gets better. I would like to say that I would hope that 2025 JSON's indexes will get better, but the way that they shipped is kind of in a pretty sketchy state. Read the blog post for more. Next up, Saka says, I have a server handling around 100,000 batch requests a second. The problem is TempDB contention. I have increased the number of TempDB files to 16, but in high workload, it's still not helping me. Would a memory-optimized TempDB help me solve this issue, and how much memory will be required? Check out my class, Fundamentals of TempDB. I go into this exact thing. I tell you when you have to switch from temp tables to table variables, and when you have to switch from table variables to memory-optimized table variables in order to solve the problems. I will say, though, at 100,000 batch requests a second, you shouldn't be creating temp objects. Like, that immediately sets off a warning bell to me. We shouldn't need 100,000 temp tables per second. That makes me think that something else weird is going on with that workload, and I would want to know more about those queries to try to tune the underlying queries. But if you want to leave it as is, that's go attend that class, and I give you those exact steps, and I show when it makes things better and why. Next up, Joseph says, hey Brent, have you ever used SP Check Security? Would you recommend that, or is there another tool you would prefer for checking security vulnerabilities? My contract prohibits security work. I do not do any security work whatsoever because it is so dangerous these days with all the problems with ransomware. So I don't touch it. I don't go near it. I'm sure it's, I don't know. So you remember, just a little while ago, I said that I like to be optimistic. I was going to say, I'm sure that it's fine. I don't know. I've never looked at it. So there you go. Let's see here. Next, we have Non-Clustered Cell Store says, I've just finished Fundamentals of Column Store, as well as the big reading list at the end. Have you had any further thoughts on what you would put into a Mastering Column Store class? Not at all. The market on that is so small. There are so few people who would do it. And the work that it would require from me is so high that there's no ROI on that course. Next up, Big Blue says, hey Brent, do large companies like Fortune 500 use SQL Server more than other database engines, or does company size not correlate with database platform choice? Don't think of like a Fortune 500 company getting everyone together in one room and saying, all right, everyone, we're going to use SQL Server, or we're going to use Oracle. Large companies got that way by acquiring lots of smaller companies who have a lot of standardized tools that they use. They have a lot of in-house stuff that they build. And so the bigger a company is, the more databases you see them using. You'll hear companies like Microsoft and Oracle say, 100% of the Fortune 500 use our database. And that makes it sound like those companies have standardized on it. But I tell you what, 100% of the Fortune 500 use text files. 100% of the Fortune 500 use Excel. It's not like that is their only strategy. They use everything. Next up, Major Blood says, how did the AWS outage affect you? Are you being compensated by Amazon? No, not at all, because we use a queue-based development for SQL Constant Care. SQL Constant Care is 100% in AWS. If I remember right, it's mostly in US East 1 as well. But Richie Rump, shout out to Joris on most kinds of social media. Joris, my developer, did an awesome job of architecting that to be queue-based. So when services collapsed, the queues simply were on hold, and then they started retrying again whenever they came back up. So it did not affect us in any way, shape, or form. Richie is one of the smartest, most forward-thinking developers that I have ever had the privilege to work with. As long as I have a company, I will always have Richie involved with that company. The day that I am not able to work with him as a developer on a lot of this stuff is the day that I just stop building apps. He is that good. I am so lucky and fortunate to know him and to work with him. And I hope he hears that, and I'll point him to that when it goes live, because it's, dude is amazing. Next up, My Tea Got Cold says, on a busy OLTP system, how can I grab the actual execution plan for a short running query without setting my whole server on fire? Execute it. Just execute it. Why are you trying to gather it from watching someone else do it? If it's a short running query, execute it. Right? Just execute it. Next up, Big Blue asks, I've got a request to evaluate moving our SQL server from Enterprise Edition to Standard Edition. We have 4 cores and we're CPU bottlenecked. The idea is just to increase our core count and not increase our budget. We don't need high availability. What are the important considerations to see if this is viable? There is a DMV that says something about persisted SKU features. SKU is SKU. That's a DMV that tells you if you're using Enterprise Edition features. Check that in your databases. Start there is the first place that I would look. The other thing that I would do, I know you said you don't need high availability, but I would stand up a new SQL server and do database mirroring over to it. Do async mirroring at first, and then on a Saturday or whatever, fail over to that mirror, and then run on it for the next week or whatever. And that new mirror will be the standard edition box that you want, 8 cores or however many cores it is. If the workloads don't perform the way you want them to, then fail back over to the enterprise box. Now, I'm sure that people out there will be like, Brent, isn't there a better way to do that? Yeah, if you have reproducible load tests where you can rerun your whole workload over and over again, hardly anybody has that. And don't feel guilty if you don't. That's okay. It takes time and money to set up that kind of thing. Whereas that database mirroring advice will get you the answer right away. Next up, Pradeep says, Hi Brent, I hope you're doing well. I'm focusing on query performance tuning. How secure is the future of this specialization? Do you see it as a safe and valuable career path long term? Pradeep, the best way I can tell you is that I'm doing it. And if I didn't think it was safe and valuable, I wouldn't be doing it. I'll give you an example. About 10 years ago, I phased out of doing availability groups work because I saw the cloud coming and I said platform as a service databases are going to reduce the number of production DBA jobs required. Not going to eliminate, but just reduce that market. At the same time, cloud costs mean that performance tuning is even more viable. So many companies went hog wild into the cloud and then saw their bills and went, oh, sweet potato, somebody's got to help us reduce these costs. So the performance tuning angle is more valuable than it's ever been. It's not that production database work is not valuable, it's just not as much of a future. Now, having said that, I don't have a crystal ball. Like, LLMs came out of nowhere. ChatGPT came out of nowhere one day and just, you know, made huge changes in jobs like marketing or copywriting or stock footage photography. So you can never really tell. The best thing that you can do is keep your ear to the ground with the business and make sure that you're providing value and that you're always watching out to see what competition you have. Winey says, have you seen any AI mishaps or been asked for advice on how to prevent them from happening? We've got a database user that was made read-only by a developer using Postgres MCP server, not in prod, but still a time sink. AI is a tool. And have I seen people make mistakes with tools? Oh, son, I have gray hair. I have been around a really long time. I have been the one making mistakes with tools. As long as tools are around, people are going to make mistakes with using them. Don't blame the tool. The real trick is people have to get the training that they need in order to understand how to use the tools they have. Speaking of which, my Black Friday sale runs all November long to get you the training that you need to do your job better on SQL Server and Azure SQL DB and Amazon RDS SQL Server. Go to BrentOzar.com, click training up at the top, check out my Black Friday sale. I hope you enjoy. Now, I'm going to go over to the buffet and replenish my coffee. Because I have one of these Rockstar suites on Virgin. If you use a 360 camera and you cycle around, you'll see an outdoor shower out here, a hammock, And part of the fun with this Mega Rockstar suite is we have unlimited bottle service in the room. Like, they replenish all, there's like half a dozen bottles of gin, vodka, tequila, bourbon. I know I'm missing a couple of other things. Plus, we get, each of us, both me and Eve, get two alcohol drinks every 5 minutes the whole time we're on the ship. So I have a lot of drinking to do in order to make my money's worth. So I have to go get more coffee so that I can put more bourbon in my coffee and put a dent in those bottles in the suite. Clearly, on a cruise like this, we're everybody's friends because we get, you know, free drinks every 5 minutes, and I can't drink that many, so we just give them to other people, and it's always funny. So hopefully y'all had fun and learned something, even if it's about bad lifestyle habits. I will see y'all on the next Office Hours. Adios.